Robert, Pakistan. You say it poses a larger threat than Iran. Tell us why.
Well, you have to look at fantasy versus reality. You know, we're all hoping that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. We're hoping that Iran doesn't declare a war on its neighbors. But with Pakistan, you have a country that's had nuclear weapons, that has declared war on India 3 times. So you have a track record. And on top of that, you know, Pakistan is the central clearinghouse for jihad and violent sort of Islamic fundamentalism. And they are messing with us in Afghanistan. And so it's not theoretical anymore. You know, we work with Pakistan, and Pakistan also works against us. So with Iran, of course, we have a similar situation where they're sort of balancing the love versus the hate. But in Pakistan, you have a very real harbor of terrorism and a very real level of violence.
Now, is that being done by the rank and file or through the government in terms of this endorsement of, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and everybody else who's out there?
Well, you got to look at two things. One, there's a government. There's your local politician who doesn't carry a gun and doesn't shoot at people, and he sits behind a desk and moves paper from one side to the other. But then there are also the security forces or the intelligence forces that look at the, you know, geostrategic position of the country, and they say, you know, if we're a calm, peaceful nation, India could walk in tomorrow and take us over. But if we're a turbulent, violent nation and we're aligned with an even more violent, turbulent nation, why would India come and have Afghanistan on its border? So they deliberately mess with the sort of Pashtun tribal areas, which, you know, overlap into Pakistan. And they are very aggressive supporters of training and arming and supporting, you can call them jihadis, you can call them terrorists or insurgents in the area of Kashmir, which is controlled by India in some parts, and also inside Afghanistan. So you have a two-pronged approach.
The overall population in Pakistan, I would assume the Iranian population is more favorable to us, the people who live there, than the Pakistanis.
Well, first of all, Iran is a much smaller population. I mean, there's about 72 million people in Iran, and there's 166 million in Pakistan.
Yet Iran's a bigger country physically. Yeah.
Well, not only that, but it makes twice as much money.
Yeah.
So it's a much better off country because of the oil. It's also more socialized and centralized, so it just runs better. And you have to remember that Pakistan is not really a country. In 1947, when they chopped it off because of the fighting between the Muslims and the Hindus,
mm-hmm.
it was sort of quickly slapped together. And it has a number of ethnic groups sort of living in uneasy harmony. And then it's got the Durand Line, which a lot of people don't agree that it's a correct border, but it separates Afghanistan from Pakistan. You have the opium crop coming in from Afghanistan. You have nuclear weapons. You have all kinds of things that just you don't see a lot of in Iran. But the main thing is that Iran and Pakistan are similar if you sort of line them up and say, do they support terrorism? Yes. Do they have internal problems? Yes. Are they striving to form an Islamic-type government that might be anti-American? Yes. But Pakistan has proven that it's, you know, been a harbor for people like Osama bin Laden,
sure.
for the Taliban. It has been a violent exporter of jihadis and insurgents since the violent supporter of the Taliban. It's only just recently that sort of bit them in the butt, you know, with the Pakistani Taliban actually fighting against the government.
Who's watching the Pakistani nuke store right now?
That's a really good question.
That's scary, isn't it?
Well, we've adopted a position that it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And we've always worked, I mean, I say we, the U.S. government and the CIA and to a certain extent our military, has always worked inside with the ISI, which is the Pakistani intelligence apparatus, and the Pakistani government ever since Musharraf. So we've kept our thumbs and our fingers on what's going on there. But you have to remember that Pakistani nukes were developed sort of in an arms race with India. And the idea being that Pakistan may lose, but they'll be able to fire off a few nukes into India that'll kill a few million people. It's not a very comforting reason to have nuclear weapons.
And the father of Pakistan's nuclear capability, he's the one who sold his trade to, the Koreans, the Libyans? And
well, see, this is what you got to look at. When people talk about Iran's nuclear program, you know, people watch it like a hawk. But how do you know that another country doesn't just accept a certain amount of money or a certain ideological belief and then fire a missile? I mean, look at the number of terrorists that Pakistan harbored, you know, terrorist groups that are radical, violent Islamic groups.
Yes.
And they're all looking for something. Now, they managed to figure out that if you hijack a plane, it's like a missile. They're also trying to figure out how to stick things in your underwear and how to stick things in your shoes. I mean, you know, they're trying everything they can. But if someone was to hand them a nuclear weapon and show them how to work it and say, push this button, they'd be happy to push that button.
They would push it. Now, where would they aim it, in your opinion?
Well, they wouldn't aim it because they don't have delivery systems. What they would do is ship it. You know, if you have a nuclear weapon, it takes some level of sophistication. So you'd probably ship it in a container or you'd put it on a large vessel of some kind, and you'd park it in a harbor somewhere.
And just detonate it right there?
Exactly.
Hmm. And that's doable?
Well, it's all doable if you have access to it. I mean, it's not that easy to go find and arm and detonate a nuclear weapon.
Are we watching out for this, Robert? I mean, how?
Absolutely. That's the if we do one thing well, and it's based on our Cold War experience, is we monitor nuclear materials, and we have huge agencies that are ready to spring it in a moment's notice if they find any trace of nuclear contamination or, you know, dirty bomb materials. We're so paranoid about it that we even invaded Iraq on the premise that they had WMDs and they didn't.
Or we used it as a reason.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that we, because of the Cold War, we have a very large, very efficient group of people, along with the UN, that monitor for nuclear type weapons.
Do we have the technology that could pinpoint a ship, for example, if it had any nuclear material and it was coming our way?
I'm not a scientist, but I know that we spend a lot of money doing exactly that. And then we do have rapid reaction forces. A lot of the work that the special forces were trained to do was in finding and interdicting nuclear weapons and cargo. You know, back once again in the Soviet times when we knew they had weapons, that we knew that they wanted to do something, and we kept tracking them. But, you know, the interesting thing where we're not good at is things like something as simple as propane or, you know, fertilizer. You know, these can create explosions that aren't nuclear in size, but they can have a much more devastating effect on the perception of the population.
Robert, why do you think we're hated so much? And let me preface it by saying this. I mean, we're not hated as people because we have two cars and we have a house and we work, those who are employed right now. We're not hated for that. Why are we hated as a country by these people?
Well, I look at it this way. You know, I've sat in jihadi camps and in terrorist groups, and we've talked about this. And the funny thing is that, A, most of those people have relatives that live in the States.
Right.
You know, we all come from somewhere. The second thing is if you offer them a green card, they jump at the chance.
Sure.
But the hatred really comes from an interesting foreign policy. You know, we support Israel, and that in a large section of the world really irritates people, you know, because they don't look at it the same way we do. They don't see the sort of the World War II heritage and the fact that this country was set up to give a homeland
right.
to a certain ethnic or religious group. They see it as an invasion of their territory.
Right.
So they take it as a direct affront, and they look back to the Crusades, and they see Westerners coming from Europe and slaughtering people and taking over land. So they have a different narrative than we do. And the second thing is that when we try to do good, we always end up proving their narrative to be correct. You know, when we invade Iraq, we are pretty much saying, yes, everything you thought we would do to you, we're doing to you.
We're doing to you. And the same in Afghanistan and every place we go.
Well, now, here's the interesting thing. In Afghanistan, the Taliban were not anti-American.
No, they weren't.
They made them anti-American. And we were cheered. I mean, if there was a singular moment in which America did bring freedom, it was, you know, 2001 December in Afghanistan.